Welcome to round two of my podcast with Denise Kane, international yoga teacher trainer and yoga teacher. Denise lives in Ubud in Bali, and later in the year we'll be visiting Australia. Not Melbourne at this point, it looks like, but we can all definitely travel. It will be worth doing. And without further ado, here is here's Denise and me having a good yarn. Happy New Year. So I hear that you might have been awoken by someone doing some gardening.
6 o'clock for 3 straight hours.
Good Lord.
Until he ran out of gas right next to my bedroom wall. Mm. It was awesome.
Yeah, well, I guess at least you didn't lose any dogs.
And he was starting up again.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I've got some questions, but I guess we can just see where it goes as well.
Sure.
So last time we spoke, you were completing your teacher training and you're planning the workshops for Yoga Barn. So can you tell me what those workshops are looking like and whether you've started that already?
The master classes that I was doing?
Yeah.
So I did a series in October for those, and then because I had a training in November, the Yoga Barn put them on hold for me, just to give me a little more room, and they went great. I only did, it was three consecutive workshops, and I think they were great. I mean, honestly, Kat, you know, I kind of only know one thing, but I think I know it pretty well, and that's mostly what I teach is... It's about chakras and koshas and really how we learn and how we move. And and that's essentially, no matter how I try to, you know, talk about different subjects, for me, it always comes back to those two things. So that's how they went. And I think it was really great.
You know, it's interesting because in my yoga teacher training, we didn't really look at the koshas. And yet when I do my own self-study and I read everything and listen to everything, I just can't conceive of being able to do yoga without an awareness of them. So to anyone who's going, kosha, what is that? Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, essentially, it's just like in, I mean, there are so many systems. And in yoga, you kind of have to look at things as systems. Like I would say the Yoga Sutras are a system, and the Yamas and Niyamas are a system, and the 8 limbs are a system, and the chakras are a system, and then the koshas are a system as well. So that's really how I view them, and how these systems intersect is where the magic is. And so the koshas are a system, what I call the system of how we learn, and not just yoga, but really anything that we're doing. So you have 5 layers that move horizontally inward, and you start with the food layer, which is called Anamaya Kosha, and then the energy layer, which is called Pranamaya Kosha, and then you have Manamaya Kosha, which some people confuse with being the mind or an understanding, but the way that I see it and teach it is that once you reach Manamaya Kosha, but you can't get to it unless you really serve the first 2 koshas well. Manamaya Kosha is actually a no-thinking. It's like the no-thinking zone. When you know something so well because of the first 2 koshas, and you get to that place where you don't have to think about something, it's a no-thinking. And then you have the Vijnanamaya Kosha, which is considered to be the wisdom body. But I think of it more as the, let's see, how do I define that? You caught me off guard here. But I think the Vijnanamaya Kosha is where there's no judgment. And then the Anandamaya Kosha, which is called the bliss body, is, again, when people confuse bliss with joy or being blissed out. But blissful or bliss, that bliss moment is really the moment of nothingness, which is equal to the eighth limb of Ashtanga Yoga, which is Samadhi, mm-hmm. which means to see equally. So it's really not about ascension or any blissed out moment. It's about nothingness.
And is that something that most people will reach or experience?
The nothingness?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I think it can be, I think it's available all the time. It's just that you don't want it to last for a long time. The minute you notice it, it's gone. The minute you have an awareness of oh, I'm blissed out, it's the moment's gone.
Yeah.
So it's not really something to achieve. It's more something to, or even to strive for. Yeah. I think we want to strive for the more material, tangible, physical things that are available to us, and the mm-hmm. and the subtle aspects will follow along for the ride.
I really
it's
love
impossible
that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I really love that. And this is why you are my teacher. You know, I listen and it makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. how is your New Year? Enough about me, Kat. Let's talk about you. What are your plans for 2018?
see, now that's... Okay, well, I was going to get to that, so that's good. I guess I feel like I live in a constant state of having too many options and then making even more for myself, and in the end, not really... I guess because I haven't narrowed it down, I just feel like there is too much flying around, so I feel like I live in a constant state of confusion, but... what I have committed to is that this year I'm going to do my 300-hour additional training because I feel like as much as I love teaching and as much as I feel that I have to offer, I don't feel like I am really immersing myself in knowing enough for my own personal practice and as a teacher. So I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to do that. But it's a commitment I've made. I'm sort of awaiting to hear about a job that I had an interview for that sounded promising. But, I guess until I find out about that, I'm a little bit up in the air.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, look, it can feel like sometimes I am not doing enough or doing anything, and then I have to really reflect and go, yeah, but I've been teaching. I've had work published in media that I have a lot of respect for. So it's sort of reminding myself, yeah, I don't need to be in this forward propulsion all the time.
Right. I mean, I look at some of the things that you do, and I think, man, if I had her energy and drive, I would get so much done.
No, but it's a drive that's a little bit like, the first boyfriend who goes really hard and fast and it's not very good. You know, it's a lot of energy, but then if it's not directed in the right way, then it's just exhausting.
Yeah, totally. I can relate to that.
Yeah, but then you go and do these wonderful yoga teacher trainings all over the world, and I talk about doing things, and it doesn't happen. So you're a creature of doing, which is what I really need to be.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's give you that 300-hour training this year, yeah?
Yeah. So you're running one in Ubud towards the end of the year. Are there any others that you're doing throughout the year?
Yeah, I'm doing a 300-hour training in a place near Sydney called The Entrance at a yoga studio named Modern Organic.
And that's 300 hours.
And it's 300 hour, and I'm super excited about it.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that you were doing 300 hour. I thought it was workshops. Mm-mm. Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Met this guy that came to one of my master classes at the yoga barn, and he just came up to me after class and asked if I did advanced trainings, and man, the whole thing just fell together really nicely. So I should have confirmed dates with them already, because then I went on a little holiday to Sri Lanka and haven't really done anything. So, but it's planned for June and August and October. We're going to be doing 3 12-day modules. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I'm so excited about it.
Oh, okay. So how does that work? So how long are each module? How long is each module going to be?
They're 12-day modules. Mm-hmm. And we'll have one a month for every other month, 3 months.
Okay.
Yep. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I might have to do that. Nothing else appeals to me. Like, when I hear you talking, when I see what you post online, I just think that's my teacher. Anything else that I do would be, you know, would be plan B. So I'll have to find a way to make that happen.
Yeah, let's just make it happen, okay?
Yeah. Okay, well,
you and me,
see,
Kat,
look what you've done now. There's my New Year's resolution that I didn't make. is Charlie going to be coming?
Yeah, he'll be there, I think, the first module. He'll come to Australia with me.
Okay.
But then he's going to start school, and he won't be able to travel, so.
Has he been Australia before?
Yeah, many times with me.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's happening, so that's good. okay, here's my next question. So you mentioned last time that we spoke that there was no grand plan when you moved to Ubud 7 years ago, approximately. Do you have moments of wondering what's going to happen next or questioning what you're doing now?
I mean, honestly, I feel that way really strongly, simply because, I mean, I've got it made here. I'm so grateful for the yoga barn and everybody that I work with. And it's just, living in Bali is, you know, some people can do it forever, but my focus right now is on my son's education, and he's going to be starting high school. So right now I am really trying to decide, where is he going to do 4 years of high school in a place where I feel like he's going to really get his, you know, banging education that's going to set him on the right, you know, give him the right direction for the rest of his life. And I just don't know where that is. I'm not sure that it's Bali.
That's so interesting, because a lot of the time, even in the brief periods when I've been in Ubud and you see families of expats, they're always kids under 12, I guess. It's never really occurred to me. You know, I'd never thought about it. But, come high school and college, I guess, yeah, that's when the dilemma comes in of what you're going to do.
For sure. And I think green school is a great option for families that can afford it. There's no way I can pay for that.
Is that in Ubud?
It's about 30 minutes outside of Ubud. And that's mostly, like, when you see high school kids, that's mostly where they are. And there's another great school here down in Sanur, Diet Mika. But, you know, I think that, it's, you know, there's a shelf life for a kid in Ubud as well, you know, and the circle of friends is small to nil. And, you know, I think I'm ready for my son to see more.
Yeah.
He's like hungry for more, and he's hungry for, you know, like kind of that fantasy high school, like the big doors and rooms full of kids and like the big high school kind of experience. I really think he wants that.
Well, he's had priceless experience in traveling, in having a mum who runs her own business and strongly commits to values in life. I mean, wherever he goes to school, he's got all the essential elements that he's always going to be a brilliant student.
Yeah, I think so too. He's already brilliant. Not worried about that at all. Mm. But I think just the social environment and activities and just like stuff you need to do when you're in high school. Mm. You know, like...
Have you looked at Australia?
You have to have your first kiss at some point, Kat, right? He's not going to get that in Ubud. He's grown up with these girls. They're all like his sisters. It's not going to happen here. And I need that to happen for him.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, it's true. After you've finished fixing Charlie's love life, maybe we can fix mine as well. But that might be more than high school level. Have you looked at Australia as an option?
Mm. I haven't. I've looked at Italy.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I've looked at going back to the States. I mean, we haven't really decided anything yet. I have a little bit of wiggle room right now, but we definitely are going to have to make a decision soon.
I just think if modern organic is near Byron Bay, that's sort of the centre of... It's sort of the Ubud of Australia, if you like. It's very much yoga, wellness. There's a strong tradition there of healing and having a very artistic sort of culture. And I can't help thinking that would be a place where you would inevitably find work, and it would also be a really great environment for Charlie.
Interesting. I have two other friends that also mentioned that area as well.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'll send you some locations that might be worth just having a look into. I mean, I look it up and I go, wow, that looks amazing. To be honest, though, it's a little bit like green school, and as much as it looks beautiful and everyone's all about the art and the yoga, it's extraordinarily expensive to live.
I mean, I am a single mom, and you know, it's still, I'm, you know, as famous as I am, Kat, you know how I'm super worldwide celebrity, but still a single mom.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my first job.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know what sort of eligibility there would be in Australia for assistance with that sort of thing, but I think it can't hurt to look into it.
Yeah, it's an option. I'll put it on our list of options. That's a good. You just want me closer to you. That's all.
Well, there's that. There is that too. Absolutely. But I guess when I say. And as far as the questioning, the next thing I wanted to ask was, at Yoga Barn, you have so many students who are traveling, so they're coming and going. And I guess, do you ever feel that you miss that connection that you would have had at One Song, where people are coming back week after week, month after month, and you get to know people? I mean, how do you develop a sense of community and relationships?
Yeah, in Yoga Boga was, One Song was just a private studio where I did trainings and had some classes, but Yoga Boga was my school.
That's
where
right.
I had teachers and classes, and I did love that. You have the same people in class, you know, three or four classes a week that I taught there, and what I like about being here, and one of the first things I noticed is it took me a couple of years to really transition from the way that I taught at my own school to now I'm teaching in a tourist town, and it made me a better teacher because I have a shorter period of time with a student. Mm. And it didn't allow me to be so lazy, you know, where it's like, oh, got 50 of the greatest yogis and I could just like say stuff and everybody would do it. And here it's like, okay, I really need to really refine my cueing and my purpose and what I want out of this. And so it's made me such a better teacher. So, and now I think when a student comes in, I always ask them how, you know, if we make a connection during class, then they have questions, then I always say, how long are you in town? And if they say I'm here for, you know, a week or 2 weeks or just one more day, then I kind of know what to focus on and where to put the energy and to give them what I think will really benefit them the most. If I have one class with them or if I have a whole month with them. Mm. So it just made me a stronger teacher with better, you know, intuition and focus.
That makes sense.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That element of having relationships, so people that you work with over time, I mean, do you miss that?
I miss it a lot. I feel like, I mean, I do have regular students and, you know, the Yoga Barn family, we're close and, you know, we really rely on each other to kind of prop each other up if we need it. And so I do feel like I still have that community. It's just different. It's just a different kind of community, you know. It took me a while to figure out how to go from being a studio owner to just being a teacher at a studio. Because, oh my God, that was the most challenging part for me. But I don't think I could ever own a studio again.
Yeah, see, that's the dilemma that I've got at the moment as well, just to talk about me a whole lot. But
please.
You know, I feel like there's this expectation that, and especially in my late 30s, that I'm going to have this grand plan for what I want to do. And, you know, I go to job interviews or even just people I've never met. And, you know, what do you want to be doing? And do you own this? And do you run that? And the thing is, no, I rent where I live. I don't have any grand plan to run a studio. I guess I have flirted with the idea of what it would be like to run my own space. But then I see the reality of it with people that I know, and they're constantly working on admin. There's that constant stress of, am I marketing things? Am I selling things? And I think there's already so many zillions of studios. Is that something that I really want to aspire to?
Yeah, I totally can relate. It's like, I mean, even here, and I was interviewed about 10 years ago in Portland for some magazine. I don't remember what it was, but because at the time there were two main studios in Portland. It was my school, Yoga Boga, and this other school, Yoga in the Pearl. And then all of a sudden, it's like studios just started popping up all over the place. Mm. So during the interview, the woman said, you know, do you feel like there's more competition now? And I thought, like, there's never competition in the yoga community because the more studios there are, the more teachers there are, it opens it up to more people that might not have otherwise started doing yoga. Mm. So I felt like it's not a competition thing. But that was 10 years ago. Mm. And now it's like the business of yoga has taken its hold on so many communities that it is just marketing and flyers everywhere. And there's so much work to be done to just keep it running and kind of, you know, just got to keep turning that wheel.
Yeah, I just, I guess what I know that I want is that I want to be able to run classes without being told how to teach. And I'd like to have that feeling of having my own space, but the idea of all the marketing and business and
And just the fact that, especially in Melbourne, there's a yoga studio on every street. I mean, I just don't feel like, I feel like I've got something to say and something to teach, but I don't really want to do that hardcore, like you say, the flyers and the ads and the, so I'm just wondering, I mean, if you have that, if you don't have that grand plan to own something and do something, I mean, I think that's where I'm feeling a little lost. I mean, if that's not your grand plan, then what is?
Yeah, I think that there's, I mean, in Ubud, there's a studio on every street now as well, honestly. They're just everywhere. I mean, if you're supposed to have a grand plan by your mid-30s, then I've really blown it, Kat. I feel like I'm so distracted by the you saying that just a couple minutes ago. I can't really think. I'm like, oh, shit, man. That's what I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting the grand plan.
Yeah, but you owned a studio, so you know that, and you've done it, and then you've moved on. And now you teach classes all around the world. I mean, you're living my dream, so hand it over.
Yeah, it's pretty, I feel so, I'm so blessed.
But it's okay, isn't it? I mean, if you're quiet and you sort of listen and you just go with things, I mean, inevitably, if you listen to your own values, surely whatever you do is part of that plan.
Yeah, for sure. I think so too. The grand plan can't just be one thing, like, it's the culmination of all of these amazing things that we're doing,
And I guess I have that approach when it comes to training, of thinking, well, I don't believe that I'll walk out of training with a certificate and all of a sudden get a job. It's not the same as when you do your uni degree and you walk out and you hope someone gives you a career. With my training, the way that I see it is, it's a lifestyle. It's the training that I need to live rather than the training that I need for a job. And I think too often people get caught up with, well, if I do this training, will this studio hire me? But I just think when it comes to yoga, it's a different school. You need to think, is this the training that's going to give me what I need to live the life that I want to be role modeling, I guess, for my students and for the people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really what it's about. And I think that's the benefit of one of the 30-day immersions types of trainings, because it really is daily practice, and it does kind of set that in motion to hopefully continue doing that. With the modules that I do, however, we do the 12 days, but then you have self-practice homework for a whole month and a half where you have to keep a journal. And so that does still kind of set that tone for your daily practice and how you're, you know, what your lifestyle is and how you're setting that, you know, goal or role model intention. Because it is challenging. It is challenging, and you're right when you say, well, if I got this certificate, now I can get a job somewhere, but it's that is what's happening, is there's so many teachers, it's so saturated, and you might be a great teacher and just not be able to get a gig anywhere, you know. And who knows? Who knows, Kat? What the hell are we doing? Why don't you and I just...
I ask myself that almost once an hour, I guarantee you.
Yeah, no, let's just pack it all in and go open a food truck somewhere, shall we?
Look, I've thought about that too, trust me. If you can do it, I've thought about it. But look, tell me about the modern organics. So with the 12-day modules, are you breaking that into certain subject periods, and how many people are going to be in a class?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of leaving, which this is what I'm really good at. I'm leaving everything up to Modern Organic to do, like, the registration and how many students are going to be there. What I'm really good at, K, cat is kind of rocking up and doing, you know, and doing my thing. But mm-hmm. beyond that, however many people they want or what it looks like is really up to them. And mm-hmm. I think they're just really, really conscious, cool owners for this space. It's this mm-hmm. partner, Karen and Kurt. Mm-hmm. And they're just super cool people. So anywhere from 12 to 20 people,
I would imagine is
kind of our parameter. I don't really want more than 20 people.
Yeah.
And then I will break them up. I'm finalizing the modules. And once I finish all that, I should have that by end of Tuesday. That's tomorrow, end of tomorrow. Because I need to send it to them as well. So we should have dates and module descriptions and everything ready to go by then.
I love that.
There are some teachers. Yeah, there are so many teachers that are like planned out for the next 3 years. And they've got these formulaic modules and these. Mm-hmm. And I just don't have that. I have to really think about each program and where it is, and 12-day modules are different than 14-day modules, mm-hmm. and three modules are different than a month, and so I just have to really sit down and put a few hours into it.
But I guess this is the beauty of experience. This is the beauty of having had the studio and then doing the courses around the world and Yoga Barn, in that all these elements that is as intimidating as it might seem every time a new training comes up, you sort of got that feel for it now.
Yeah, I do. And how it, because the rhythm, I think the thing that's most important to me is that there's that rhythm mm-hmm. is right, that the resonance is there. Mm-hmm. So I'll have that ready by tomorrow. Yeah.
I can't wait to read about it.
I'm just going to say, just do it, Kat.
Mm. Yeah, no, I absolutely I will. My little mind is already ticking over little ways to make it work. I have one more question. And that is, last time we spoke, you mentioned that you grew up with just your dad. Do you think that you had to learn to raise yourself, and what have you learned as a parent that maybe you weren't taught from?
It's such a good question. Hold on, I've just ordered a coffee. Came just in the nick of time, too. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a good question. I think that, my level of resilience is pretty high, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just being raised by a single father, but who never remarried. And, you know, now here I am, a single mother who's never remarried. Oh, shit.
That's okay, there's still time.
I don't know.
And guess what? We've got same-sex marriage over here. So come on over, and I'll marry you.
All right,
can go to school here, and you can teach me yoga every day.
And we can date, and then we can date men, right? We'll just have this fake marriage.
Oh, totally. Totally.
All right, sounds good. We're coming to some solutions here. I'm just grateful. I'm going to go back to Sajivan Singh on this, because I'm really grateful for what he taught me more than, you know, he taught me how to be in the world, and my parents taught me how not to be in the world. And there's this really perfect balance, because my parents were, you know, they just did not sort it out too well.
Mm-hmm.
They were great people in some ways. So I would say that my teacher taught me how to be in the world, and my parents taught me how not to be, and how that translates to me being a single mother with my son is mostly comes from really my study with the chakras and each and that system, and how that develops as we grow, and having those kind of open conversations with my son about his own system of chakras and how he's showing up in the world. And we have some pretty interesting conversations about those subtle bodies and those energy aspects of our life. And I'm really grateful for that. So it's not, kind of the influence of my, I mean, I don't know. I have to really think about it, because sometimes I think I'm not influenced by my childhood. And then other times I think like, oh my God, I'm so influenced by it.
Yeah.
But I'm at this point now where I don't know if I told you, my sister died last year from a heroin overdose.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so actually January 31st will be 1 year anniversary. And she was like my sister that I never really knew, because mm-hmm. we didn't grow up together. When my parents got divorced, they separated us.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, she had a lot of trouble and a lot of addiction, and our relationship was always strained, and she was missing for the last 13 years, and then we were notified that she died of a heroin overdose. And it's just that relationship of my whole family, far beyond any parental or lack of parental influences that I have, mm-hmm. that's the one that has the strongest hold on me, and that's the one that I'm just, you know, just really barely coming to terms with right now. I gave myself a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I got 30 days to deal with this.
Yeah, but how old was she?
She was 2 years older than me.
So
she was, I just turned 55, so she was 57.
So that's 57 years of life, and you've given yourself a year.
That's cool, right?
Yeah.
All right, I gotta go, Kat. I'll see you later. Nice talking to you. What I did was I gave myself a year to not address it.
Mm-hmm.
And that I told myself I would start like addressing it in a year. So that's coming up. And it's time.
To bring it full circle, I mean, doesn't this in a way, and maybe I'm completely off track, but doesn't it come back to the koshas and allowing things to work at different levels and layers? And even if you say, and I know I do it all the time, I'll deal with it later, I'm not thinking about it. As soon as you say that, it's a little bit like saying, not going to imagine a massive elephant in the middle of the room, not thinking about that, and then, of course, it's going to come back to you constantly.
Well, she's on my mind all the time, and that yeah. whole thing is on my mind, but I feel like I've done a pretty fair job, because, thank goodness, 2017 was the very busy year for me.
Yeah.
A lot of travel, had back-to-back trainings, and it just kept me busy. And there was mm-hmm. no way that I could start to begin to unravel or unfold anything about it, because I really just needed to keep my shit together to get through these jobs that I had.
But you know what? How do you unravel that? I mean, like, what do you do? Because even if you sit down and go, I'm dedicating this time, I'm going to think about it, I'm going to work it all out, even then, how can you? I mean, other people's lives, even our own, to some degree, you just can't really, you don't even know where to start or stop with that.
No, that's true.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please.
So
you can tell me in person in June, July.
I will. Yeah, that'll be awesome.
But I think
Do you know where the entrance is?
Look, I did just Google it. So it's on the coast of New South Wales. Which is a fair way from where I am. But, it'd be absolutely worth it. Because I haven't been to that part of Australia. So.
Okay.
Hmm.
All right, back to you. You were saying something. You were saying something about... I interrupted you.
Well, since I can't think of it, it kind of being massively important.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Look, I feel like from here what I might do is I'm going to email you and work out how I'm going to fit these modules in, but I'm committed, I'm going to do it. And
okay.
Maybe if we wrap up the recorded talk for now and share that richness with the rest of humanity, and I'll just have a chat to you after that. How does that sound?
I love it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you again for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, it always takes us a little bit of time to put it together, but it's so worth it. I love talking to you, Kat.
Thanks, Dee.
Thank you.